You're listening to SBS News.
Syra, which isn't her real name, knew her relationship with her husband was bad even before she moved to Australia. But she didn't realise the financial, emotional and sexual mistreatment she endured at his hands was considered abuse.
To be frank, for me, physical abuse is only abuse. I never knew all the other things are also abuse. And I thought these are issues that can be resolved between husband and wife over the period.
Living in a foreign country with no job and her husband monitoring her every move, Syra was physically and socially isolated.
I had two miscarriages, and during even that time, he wanted me to have sex with him, and it was so painful, and he didn't leave me even for an hour to sleep. He was torturing me, and if I was crying also during that time, he would touch and see whether I'm crying or not, even in the night.
But after having already spent money on her visa and fearful that her family in India would blame her for the relationship breakdown, Syra decided to try working things out herself. That is, until her husband began restricting her food intake and withdrew all of her money from their joint account.
I was so upset that I didn't know what to do. I just asked him, do you want me to die without eating anything? Is that what is your aim? That is when the issue has become big, and he started saying, you're a slave to me. You have to do things according to me and all these things. I was not ready to do it. He was just on my head. Literally, he was standing on my head and he was shouting at the peak of his voice.
Syra rang the police to ask them to give her husband a warning. But she says they didn't visit her house to assess the situation and only called her back 4 hours later. In between the two calls, she and her husband had had a physical altercation, and he filed a police report against her, claiming he was a victim of domestic violence. Dr. Ellen Reeves is a postdoctoral research fellow with the Monash Gender and Family Violence Prevention Centre. She says the misidentification of a victim survivor as the predominant aggressor in family and domestic violence cases isn't unusual.
It's really hard to get an exact prevalence of this issue, especially because, you know, the legal system generally doesn't record this, so we don't really have administrative data. But some recent statistics from the Family Violence Reform Implementation Monitor, they found between 6.7% and 48% of all women who are listed as respondents on intervention orders, so it's really common. And JIRA, who's an Aboriginal support service here in Victoria, they actually estimated that it's 90% of their clients, which is huge.
She says it's more likely to happen to certain cohorts of victim survivors than others.
Women who are at higher risk of misidentification are First Nations women, migrant and refugee women, women with disability or mental health issues, but then you also have these underpinning factors such as drug and alcohol use, a prior history with the police, and women's use of force, which is commonly used within the context of self-defence or retaliation.
A recent assessment from In Touch Multicultural Centre Against Family Violence, which helps women from refugee and migrant backgrounds, indicates a third of their clients are misidentified as the perpetrator. Chief Executive Michal Morris says one factor that can cause misidentification is a couple being interviewed without an interpreter.
The language barrier is critical, that when we have experienced family violence, we have a right to be able to tell our story in the way we want. And sometimes it's too difficult and sometimes it doesn't happen, but it has to happen every time because we're expecting police to make decisions at a point in time when they can't get all the facts, and that is problematic.
Ms. Morris says another issue is a lack of cultural awareness among police.
One of the things that we've identified with a lot of the clients that come to In Touch is that they will come across, particularly when they're not speaking English, aggressively or at a heightened state of emotion, and that will be assumed to be aggressive, so they will be named the prime aggressor.
She says how much victim survivors choose to disclose to police can also be a contributing factor in misidentification.
We know that for a lot of women who are on temporary visas, they will be reluctant to tell everything to the police. And so they may withhold some information because they falsely believe that they can be kicked out of the country in the next day.
Dr. Ellen Reeve says the consequences of misidentification are wide-ranging and life-changing, with some victim survivors losing caring rights to their children or having problems with their visas.
There's also impacts on employment and education. You know, I know one woman that was studying to be a nurse and she was really worried that she wasn't going to get a job when she graduated because of this intervention order or criminal charges. So she ultimately quit her studies.
She says they often also lose faith in the justice system.
This is really important because when a victim survivor is misidentified, their own safety needs often aren't acknowledged, and they do have safety needs and are likely to be at risk of re-abuse. But why would you call the police when that actually happens? Nothing in that experience signals to them that the police are there to help them.
One of the recommendations of Victoria's Royal Commission into Family Violence in 2016 was that improved guidance be given to police to recognise who is the predominant aggressor and who is the victim survivor. Dr. Reeves says while that's been implemented, research shows it hasn't really changed anything.
There's a lot of risk aversity with police where they're actually, they know that they have to pick one party. They're not meant to be doing cross applications anymore. So they're sort of just making that decision and assuming that the courts will work it out. And in the courtroom, there are some issues too. I think it's not really acting as a safety net because women are really pressured to consent to orders made against them, which is just the nature of the intervention order system.
But she says there have been some improvements.
One thing that is being encouraged right now in magistrates' courts in Victoria is for magistrates to strike out applications so that women don't have to make that decision between consenting to an order and possibly then facing criminal charges if their perpetrator lures them into breaching it, as opposed to contesting the order, which can be a really long process.
Dr. Reeves says there are positive signs of reform in other jurisdictions as well, with New South Wales and Queensland looking at misidentification in the move to criminalise coercive control.
In Tasmania, in WA, South Australia, I think the conversations are being had, but in terms of governments actually directly responding to it and law enforcement responding to it, I think there's still a long way to go. And part of that issue is that it's already built into what most states are trying to do in terms of long-term cultural change within the police and the legal system.
Lauren Calloway is Victoria Police's Assistant Commissioner for Family Violence. She says in a statement that given the dynamic nature of many family violence incidents, it's critical police investigate more closely to understand the full story.
We are committed to addressing the issues contributing to misidentifying predominant aggressors, as we know the impact it has on victims. Victoria Police is particularly concerned about the impact of misidentification on our priority communities. We know the risk of misidentification can be higher where there are communication barriers and distrust of police. One of my priorities is to look at opportunities to improve police's response to violence against women and children in our priority communities.
A recent position paper from In Touch outlines five systemic changes it says are needed in Victoria to reduce misidentification. Michal Morris says they largely relate to addressing the cultural and linguistic barriers that victim survivors from migrant and refugee backgrounds can face.
We understand that at the case in point, when the police turns up to a situation, that they may not be able to access an interpreter at that moment, but then there shouldn't be a decision around the primary aggressor until both sides have had an opportunity to have an interpreter with them to tell their story. Our police need really good cultural awareness training because I think we have cultural reactions to trauma and we have cultural reactions to becoming the victim, and the police interpret based on their culture and they may end up with the wrong interpretation.
She says where a case involves someone from an at-risk group for misidentification, extra steps should be taken in the early investigation.
The best way to fix this problem is to fix it at the start and not try try and fix it at the end when you're changing the court records and the police records and the child protection records. So it really needs more systems in place for the assessment, more skills to the for the police to make the right assessment, more checks and balances to make sure the assessment's correct before it's finalised in the system. And for those occasions when it does go wrong, we need simpler ways to correct misidentification.
Syra's recorded status as the predominant aggressor was eventually reversed. But 6 years later, she's still disappointed by the way she was treated.
We just want someone to listen to our story at that point of time and guide us in the right way. Because we are scared. Especially women who come from a different country are scared.
But it hasn't deterred her from considering moving back to Australia.
If I come back, definitely some job that I have to do or some studies I would like to do. And definitely I want to stand on my own legs rather than depend on someone. And I want to make a small difference in the society. I've taken enough from the society. I need to give back.
Amy Hall, SBS News.